Numbers chapter 31. We've been working our way through the book of Numbers. Now we're up to chapter 31. Interesting chapter before us here tonight. You remember the children of Israel were wandering through the wilderness. The book of Numbers is all about their wandering as they left Egypt, and they're wandering around waiting to try to find their way to the promised land. In chapter 31, in verse number 1, it says, "And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying..." Now that's an important statement there. God was the one speaking here, and he says, the Lord spoke to Moses, and he's saying, "I want you to avenge the children of Israel of the Midianites." What's the word "avenge" mean?
Justice.
Okay, calling for justice. All right, bring justice upon the Midianites. All right, and he goes on, he says, "I want you to avenge the children of Israel of the Midianites. Afterward shalt thou be gathered unto thy people." And Moses spake unto the people, saying, arm some of yourselves for war. Let them go against the Midianites and avenge the Lord of Midian. Of every tribe, 1,000 through all the tribes of Israel shall ye send to the war." Now, let's just stop there and think about this. God told them to destroy the Midianites. And he told them that they were to take 1,000 men from each of the tribes. How many tribes were there?
12.
So there's 12,000 men. So they have a total of 12,000 men that were going to battle. Now, we see here, you know, we ask ourselves the first important question is, you know, why would God do this? Why would he want to avenge them of the Midianites? Garrett.
Also to bring judgment upon the Midianites.
But why?
Because of what they've done to Israel.
What'd they do?
I mean, I haven't been here for a while, but
yeah,
they captured them or they've done something to them.
Yeah, they did do something. Who can help us? What did they do to Israel? The Midianites.
Midianites who refused them passage through the...
No, that was the Edomites.
Midianites.
All right. So it was the... headed to Balaam. Balaam told the Midianites to do something. What did he tell them to do?
Curse.
Nope. Well, he tried to curse them, but God wouldn't let Balaam curse them. Balak wanted Balaam to curse them.
Oh, intermarry.
Yes. All right. So, well, it wasn't even intermarry. It was just all their immorality. So Balaam told the Midianites, even though God won't let me curse the nation of Israel, here's how you can get Israel to crumble. Send your women over there and entice them to immorality. And when you do that, it will destroy their walk with their God and it'll cause them trouble. And that's exactly what the Midianites did. And remember, God sent a great plague and a lot of the people of Israel died. And then in the midst of all that, remember there was that one Midianite man man who brought a Midianite woman into the camp right in front of everybody, in front of Moses, and everybody took her right into his tent and they're having immorality, and the priest went in there and stabbed him through with a javelin, and God ended the curse and ended the plague because of his bravery. Now, all of that was what the Midianites did. Now, God says, because the Midianites did that, because they were evil, because, and it wasn't just that they were evil in this sense, they were people who were they were full of idolatry and full of all kinds of corruption. See, if you remember back, if you turn your minds back many, many years earlier, Abraham was in the land. And Abraham, God promised Abraham, "I'm going to give you this land to your descendants. It's going to be your land." But he says, "I can't give it to you yet because the..." Well, I'm paraphrasing this. "Because the wickedness of the Canaanites is not to the peak that it will be one day. I cannot justify wiping them out right now." But they're headed that direction. God knew that in 400 years, the Canaanites will have corrupted themselves so vilely through all kinds of immorality and idolatry and child sacrifices and filthiness of every kind, and God says, "When that happens, I have to wipe them out." Garrett.
Well, I was just mentioning it, like, it just kind of reminds me of today. I feel like the devil's not necessarily using persecution as its main form of attacking Christians. Because we know in the past, sometimes it actually just makes Christians more on fire for God. I feel like he slowly creeps in, corrupting Christian lives with things that till eventually God eventually will come back and say, enough.
You're right. And that's exactly what's happening. The same things that they Balaam got them to do that we're seeing that happen today. There's lots and lots of immorality and ungodliness in our world. So anyway, the Midianites were these corrupt, wicked people. Now, not just the Midianites, but we see once they move into Canaan, the Canaanites were all this way. The Canaanites were full of idolatry, and they had when they worshipped Moloch, they're one of their gods. Moloch was a god that they formed a hollow image of their god, and it was made out of iron, and in the center of it they had a roaring fire, and he had his hands outstretched, and they would lay their babies on his hands and they'd roll down into the fire. Just terrible stuff. This was the Canaanites and the Moabites, and all of the ites around there were wicked, wicked people. And that's why, you know, sometimes people say, God is so cruel. Why didn't he just tell them to go in there and wipe them all out? That's unkind, and that's not right. Well, God had a reason, because he knew that if he didn't destroy all the wickedness, that the people of Israel would succumb to it. And remember what God told Israel, when you go into the promised land, you must wipe out all of them. You cannot save any of it. Do not worship their gods. Do not save any of their idols. You destroy all of it. Wipe it out completely. Did they obey? Unfortunately, no. They didn't. The book of Judges is a heartache. You read the book of Judges, and especially the first three or four pages, it's just event after event where they didn't obey God. They let some of them live. And eventually, it corrupted them. And they ended up, northern tribes went into captivity. Why? Because of idolatry and immorality. And the southern tribes finally went into idolatry and immorality as well. And God sent them to Babylon. So when God tells them to wipe out the Midianites, it was because of the evil. Now, we see here as we read on down in verse number 4, of every tribe thou shalt take 1,000 of all the tribes of Israel, and shall ye send to the war. Verse 5. So there were delivered out of the thousands of Israel, 1,000 of every tribe, 12,000 armed for war. And Moses sent them to the war, 1,000 of every tribe of them, and Phinehas, the son of Eleazar the priest, to the war with the holy instruments and the trumpets to blow in his hand. Now, that's a significant thing here. We note here that Phinehas the priest went to war with the people. I mean, he was among the soldiers. He wasn't one of the soldiers, but he went with them, and he took with him the holy instruments. And he took with him the trumpets. Now, we know what the trumpets were for. The trumpets were for sounding battle alarms and battle, take off, and that kind of thing, to round all these soldiers up, to keep them organized. So the trumpets were for the alarms and for signals. But what were the holy instruments? That is a very good question. And I dug through my commentaries, and Matthew Poole, he gives three possible explanations. I've got them in your notes here. He says the holy instruments, he's speaking of the holy instruments. Number one, some think that it may have been the ark, if it had not yet been put in the tabernacle. All right, now sometimes the children of Israel did take the ark with them to battle. But I don't know whether God ever told them to do that or not. I mean, remember the time when they took the ark to battle when the Philistines captured it, and it caused them all kinds of grief. So I don't think that was a very wise choice. That's one suggestion. I'm not so sure that's the right one. The second one is that the trumpets, it might be the trumpets that are these holy instruments. If they, it could read, the holy instruments, that is the trumpets. All right, so that is a possibility. I think that makes some good sense. Also, the third possibility is that the holy instruments were the holy breastplate, wherein was the Urim and the Thummim. All right, what was the Urim and the Thummim? We've talked about that in the past.
The decision-making.
Okay, it was the decision-making stones that they had in his little pocket in his breastplate for making choices and decisions. That's a possibility. Whatever it was, these holy instruments represented God's presence and God's power. All right. So whether it was the ark, whether it was the trumpets, whether it was the holy breastplate or something else, it represented God's presence going with them and God's power upon them. So that was a very significant thing. And then as we read on in verse number 7, and they warred against the Midianites, as the Lord commanded Moses, and they slew all the males. And they slew the kings of Midian beside the rest of them that were slain, namely Evi and Rechem and Zur and Hur and Reba and the five kings of Midian. Balaam also, the son of Beor, they slew with the sword. Okay, so Balaam was among them. He was now, apparently he was a Midianite, or he was definitely a confederate with the Midianites. And we saw that earlier as he tried to curse Israel and God wouldn't let him. So now Balaam's dead. All right, he slew all these things. And the children of Israel, verse number 9, the children of Israel took all the women of Midian captives, and all the little ones, they took the spoil of their cattle and all of their flocks and all of their goods. All right, now, what's the word spoil mean? Garrett?
Like the riches and the possessions.
Okay, it's all the things that they captured from the enemies. All right, so when they took all their spoil, so that all of the cattle that belonged to the Midianites, they captured it. It's theirs now. And it says they took the women and the little ones and all the cattle as their captives, and all their flocks, all their goods. Everything that they saw there that they wanted was good, they took with them. It was theirs. And they burnt all the cities, verse 10, wherein they dwelt, and all their goodly castles with fire. And they took all the spoil and all the prey, both of men and beasts, all right, the prey and the spoil is kind of the synonym there, same word. And they brought the captives and the prey and the spoil unto Moses and Eleazar the priest, unto the congregation of the children of Israel, unto the camp of the plains of Moab, which are by Jordan near Jericho. Now remember, picture in your mind a map of Israel. You got the Jordan River coming down. On the children of Israel are still camped on the east side of Jordan. Alright, Canaan was on the west side of Jordan. Jericho was on the west side of Jordan. But they could see Jericho from where they were encamped on the east side of Jordan. So they took them all down there to the camp where they had made their camp. Alright, so they're bringing all this down. Now, we see there that Moses saw the women captives, and he was angry. Verse number 13. And Moses and Eleazar the priest and all the princes of the congregation went forth to meet them without the camp. All right, so they couldn't actually come into the camp because we're going to see a little bit in a few moments here. They were defiled by all of the filth and the rubbish and the killing and all that kind of stuff. And so ceremonially, they couldn't come into the camp yet. So they were outside of the camp. So Moses and the priest went outside the camp. And Moses was wroth. He was angry with the officers of the host, with all the captains over the thousands and over the captains over the hundreds, which came from battle. And Moses said unto them, "Have ye saved all the women alive? Behold, these caused the children of Israel through the counsel of Balaam to commit trespass against the Lord in the matter of Peor, and there was a plague among the congregation of the Lord. Now therefore, kill every male among the little ones, and kill every woman that hath known man by lying with him." Alright, so he says here, we're not going to keep all these women. You can't do that. And again, you look at this and you think, oh, it seems so cruel, you know, just go out there and butcher all these people. But they were wicked, they were vile, they were filthy, they were idolaters, they were immoral, they were full of all kinds of disease and corruption, and God says they've got to be wiped out. And Moses was angry, and he says, you need to go kill them. And they took kill all the male children as well, said you can't keep any of them because they're going to grow up and they're going to turn against us and fight against us. You can't do that. He said the only ones you can keep are the girls that had not been, they were still virgins. The virgin girls you can keep. And they were to be their slaves or servants or maidens or whatever, but they couldn't keep any of the other ones. All right, verse number 18. But all the women and children that have not known men by lying with them, keep alive for yourselves. All right, so they lay down all these rules for them. It says, you've got to get rid of them. They've caused this plagues in the past. We cannot do that. And though it seems cruel, we don't forget that they were immoral, idolatry, idol worshippers, and they were against the people of Israel. And God said they've got to be wiped out.
Expected all of them to be wiped out.
Yes. Well, not the little ones.
Well, especially considering it's the women who were the problem in the first place.
Yes, he expected them to do that. That's why he was angry.
You know, but it seems that Moses was expecting them to come back with nobody alive.
Well, the little ones, the little tiny ones, I'm not so sure he would have been against that. The young ones. He didn't say anything against that, and even here he wasn't against that, but he was angry that they brought back the women particularly.
Doesn't actually sound like it.
Actually, he
says kill all the boys.
Yeah, I mean, he did have to kill all the boys too, but like I said, the he allowed them to keep the virgin girls.
Yeah, because he does mention, he uses the word all women, so he was implying that he was maybe expecting some, and he's like, well, you brought all of them? Kind of
so either way, whatever Moses' intent was, we can read between the lines. We can't read his mind, though. But he was angry at what they actually did. We do know that. All right, so that part we can be sure of. And then we see that there was a time of purification for all these soldiers. Verse number 19. And do ye abide without the camp 7 days. Whosoever hath killed any person or whosoever hath touched any slain, purify both yourselves and your captives on the third day and on the seventh day. And purify all your raiment and all that is made of skins and all the work of goat's hair and all things made of wood. All right, so he says you can't bring any of this stuff into the camp. It's got to be purified first. And so there was a ceremony they had to go through, and they had to wash themselves at the beginning of it and wash themselves at the end of it. There was a special ceremony. He goes on and explains a little bit of that in the next verse 21. And Eleazar the priest said unto the men of war, which went into the battle, this is the ordinance of the law which the Lord commanded Moses. Only the gold and the silver and the brass and the iron and the tin and the lead, everything that may abide the fire, ye shall make it go through the fire, and it shall be clean. Nevertheless, it shall be purified with the water of separation, and all that abideth not the fire, ye shall make it go through the water. Now, they were, so then anything that they, all the stuff they found, you know, they collect all their booty, you know, may have been swords, and it may have been tools for the garden, whatever they found, anything that would not burn up, they had to pass it through fire. Now, whether that meant that they had to pile it in a big pile and put a big fire on top of it and whatever was left at the end they could have, or whether it just literally was more of a ceremonial thing and they had a big bonfire going along and they just kind of wave it through the fire, it doesn't say. All we know is that it was able to endure the fire, the things that were made of all these things. And, you know, I don't think that it would have been piled the fire on there because things made of lead melts really easily. And so there would have been nothing but a puddle there at the end. Generally.
Well, because in ancient times, metal was the most precious resource in battle. I mean, like, cause we take it for granted today, but it was extremely labor intensive just to get even a little bit of bronze, you know. So, like, whenever a place was raided, the most valuable thing by far, out of anything that you get, it wasn't livestock, it wasn't cattle, it was always metals.
Yep.
For armor, for jewelry. So it was common to take all of the belongings and things of people, because, like, you know, there'll be bits of metal and everything, like jewelry, and then burn it, and then go through the ashes, and the only thing that usually is left over is metal. And that was very common practice in ancient Babylon and all that sort of stuff. It could be something along those lines.
It could be, but like I said, like I said, though, if they put all, you know, like the lead in there, the lead would melt down into a puddle. So I suppose they could clean up the puddle at the end afterwards. But
exactly.
So what? Yes, Peter.
You know how our minds go to bacteria and viruses? It sounds like they're purifying the thing from disease.
That's a very possibility.
But the thing is, they wouldn't have understood about viruses and bacteria at all in those days. They just did not know that.
They didn't, but God did.
Yes, God did, but they didn't.
No.
So when they were commanded to do this, they would have gone, huh? You know, these days we go, oh, that makes sense. You know, we're getting rid of all the filth from the...
Yeah. Yes.
But there are often things we don't understand in Scripture. We go, well, that doesn't make sense. Why should we do that? But as you say, God knows.
God knows. Yep. And so some of the things, if it would burn, then they just had to put it through the water. And wash it. In verse number 24, and ye shall wash your clothes on the seventh day, and ye shall be clean, and afterward ye shall come into the camp. All right. So the God told them that they needed to wash all these things, clean all these things. And he talks here in verse 23 of the water of separation. And that caught my attention. I thought, well, I wonder what he's talking about there with the water of separation. There's a possibility. Remember they had that red heifer that they burned to ashes, and then they collected all the ashes, and they would put some of the ashes in water as a water of purification. That's a possibility that this is what he's talking about. Whether they just took a big bucket or tub of some sort and sprinkled a little of this ashes in there as a ceremony, and then they dunked the things in the water, or whether they washed them in the water, or whether it was just plain water. Some commentators say, it was just water. You know, they just had a water that was a water used for cleaning and purifying and getting off the disease and germs and things of that nature. We don't really know, but either way, the things either had to be burned or they had to be washed before they could bring them into camp, and then they had to make sure they washed their clothes. And then, after all of that, after 7 days of doing all this purification thing, then they could come into camp. So that'd be kind of frustrating. You know, you haven't seen your family for a whole week, but you can't come into camp because you're unclean until you've done all these things. But then in verse number 25, and the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, take the sum of the prey that was taken, both of man and beast, thou and Eleazar the priest, and the chief of the fathers of the congregation, and divide the prey into two parts between them that took the war upon them, and went out to battle, and between all the congregation. All right, so he said, everything you've collected, I want you to divide it in half. Half of it goes to the soldiers, and half of it goes to the rest of the people. All right? And so they divided it all in half. And then he says in verse 28, and levy a tribute unto the Lord of the men of war which went out to battle, one soul of 500, both of persons and of the beeves, which was the cattle, and of the asses and of the sheep, and take it of their half and give it unto Eleazar the priest for an heave offering of the Lord. All right, so he said here they were to take this tribute. It was a portion, a small portion, and he says it was to be 1/500th of the goods. Now, if you look at a little chart I made for you here on the paper. You see on the chart here that first there's the total, the list that has a total. They got 675,000 sheep. And they had 72,000 oxen and 61,000 asses and 32,000 virgins. All right, so that was the total. They divided it in half. The soldiers got half of it, and the people, three lines over there, got half of it. Then the levy for the soldiers was 1/500th of it. And then levy for the people, we'll see in just a moment, was 1/50th. All right, so they had to give a lot more of their portion. And so that divides it all up so you can see how much was actually given. And so the soldiers' portion, that 1/500th of it, was given to Eleazar the priest. So the priest got this to use. And then, verse 30, in the children of Israel's half, thou shalt take... one portion of 50 of the persons and of the beeves and of the asses and of the flock and all manner of beasts, give it unto the Levites, which keep the charge of the tabernacle. So the Levites got the portion of the peoples, and the priests got the portion of the soldiers. Okay? So that chart, that'll help you to understand, and you can follow it through the scriptures, and all that's laid out for us. So basically, that little chart tells you what's in verses 30 down to verse 47. It kind of summarizes all that for you. So I'm not going to read all that for us there. And then get down to verse number 48. And it says, and the officers which were over the thousands of the host, the captains of thousands and the captains of hundreds, came near unto Moses. Now these are the soldiers. And they said unto Moses, thy servants have taken the sum of the men of war, which are under our charge, and there lacketh not one man of us. So what's he saying here? Nobody died. Not one of the Israelite soldiers died, and they wiped out the Midianites completely. So not one of them died. And we have therefore brought an oblation for the Lord, that's a gift or an offering to the Lord, what every man hath gotten of jewels of gold and chains and bracelets and rings and earrings and tablets and to make an atonement for our souls before the Lord. And Moses and Eleazar, the priests, took the gold of them, even all the all wrought jewels and all the gold of the offerings that they offered up to the Lord of the captains of the thousands and the captains of hundreds, and was 16,750 shekels. All right, now, look on your sheet here. Did some calculating. They gave all these treasures, verse number 50, and the gold weighed 16,750 shekels. Scholars tell us that a shekel weighs about 0.35 ounces. I know we don't use ounces here, but hold with me. That is about 5,862.5 ounces of gold. Today's price is the gold is worth 3,271.01 Australian dollars per ounce. That comes out to 19,176,276. That's a lot of gold. That's a lot of gold.
Today's price for gold in Australia.
It was the day I did the chart.
Well,
the day that I did it, I went right on the web and found the current rate. So might have changed since then, but that's the way it was on the day I created the paper here about 2 weeks ago. All right, so there's a lot of money that they brought these. This is their prize. Now, this wasn't all that they got. This is just an offering. They got a lot of spoil from those enemies. Israel was getting rich off of this. It was an abundance of things that they got. God was blessing them and meeting their needs. And then Moses and Eleazar, the priest, took the gold of the captains of thousands and hundreds and brought it unto the tabernacle of the congregation for a memorial for the children of Israel before the Lord. All right, so he brought it as a memorial. He said, we're going to set this up. This is going to be, they took all that gold and said, this is here, and we're going to use this for making things, probably used it to make all the various things that they need in the tabernacle. And he said, it's going to be a memorial to remind us of what God did and how God protected us. Johnny?
I was just going to say, as far as the spoil of the people, right, it's interesting. I think it's kind of like, it's almost hard to know whether that's just what they did regardless, or whether God actually told them to do it. Because when you look back to the time of, well, I mean, if you look at almost all of the battle, when they were taking the kings, like in the Ai, and said, God over and over and over and over and over and over and over again told them to leave none alive.
Yes.
I mean, he made it so clear so many times that it's almost.
But where were they now? Where were they now? They were not in Canaan. They were on the east side of Jordan. They hadn't entered Canaan yet. Once they got into Canaan, you're right. They were to wipe out every single thing that was alive of the people, not the animals, but the people. But here,
sometimes the animals
is right. Yeah, well, that was a special time when that was when Saul was attacking the Amorites or the Ammonites or whatever it was, one of those ites down in the south that had corrupted Israel again, and God said, I want them all wiped out, every single thing, nothing alive. And so, yes. So sometimes God did change the rules on that, but John Reed's right. Once they entered into Canaan, everything was to die. But outside of Canaan, it wasn't quite.
It was interesting as well, because I know we'll see this later on, but if the people, you know, they were supposed to, what tribe was it again that lied to them about the long journey? They weren't supposed to spare
the Gibeonites.
That's right. And because they had made a vow to the Gibeonites, they, even though God had told them they had to destroy them, they couldn't go back on it because God had told them about the importance of vows. It's funny that
their vow was more important than...
They've got held to it. But it's always find that interesting because, I mean, we'll see this more later on, but it's almost interesting how... It's a very interesting situation because they were taught to do one thing, but because they did it ignorantly, another rule that God had set down held them from having to follow, now carry through of that rule, which is... It's an interesting situation.
That is true. And then later on, years and years later, King Saul tried to wipe out the Gibeonites to because he didn't like the fact that the Gibeonites were left alive, and then God plagued Saul. So, yes, sir.
Yeah, I think maybe one way of looking at it as well is sometimes we look at that and think, oh, why would God say to wipe them out? I mean, yeah, they were bad. But I think the big reason as well is the future. God saw the future. And he knew, for example, that say they did leave this group alive, that he would only cause problems within Israel, which would inevitably probably lead to a lot more death and a lot more wars and suffering and who knows what else in the next hundreds of years to come. So
yes. In the same light of that, why was Israel selected and protected? Why?
Because they were separate.
Why?
Because they followed the laws of separation.
Why?
So Jesus could eventually...
Because the Messiah was going to come through them, the Savior of the world. And God said, I cannot allow this. And Satan was doing everything he could to corrupt Israel, to destroy Israel, to disrupt that, because God knew that Messiah was coming through Israel. So let's just finish this up here and we'll be done. For the down in some principles for today, for Christians to live lives separate from sin is a high priority in God's sight. Now, he's not asking us to kill all the pagans around us. But he does not. But we must not live like that they live. 2 Corinthians 6:17. Wherefore, come out from among them and be separate, says the Lord, and touch not the unclean thing, and I will receive you. You know, as a whole, Christians are not doing a very good job of this. You look at the world around us, and those who call themselves Christian are not doing a very good job of doing what God said to do. And as a result, things are crumbling. Yes, sir.
Just adding to the, you mentioned, you know, our job today isn't going around killing people to say get rid of evil, but it kind of has turned around. God says, heal yourself in a sense, deny yourself, and don't you allow yourself to become evil.
Yep, that's very true. Okay, then the levy here that we saw was a reminder of us again of the tithe or responsibility of supporting God's work with our income. And then the generous gift of the soldiers also reminds us of to be truly grateful for God's protection and to express that to him in our giving. You know, one of the things we often don't think, at least I say we, maybe it's me, but I often don't think about giving as an expression of gratitude. And that's exactly what it is, though. When we give of our money, we're saying, God, thank you for what you've done for me.